You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
His genius won the war by breaking the Nazi military enigma codes, but his eccentricities exiled him from the world he helped save. Alan Turing's peek into the nature of consciousness and intelligence delivered insights we still use today in designing and evaluating computers. But his mathematical revelations also seemed to reveal an inner contradiction within his soul, the power and tragedy of which is worthy of Shakespeare. The story is all told in the film The Imitation Game, out this week, starring Benedict Cumberbatch.
You need me a lot more than I need you. I like solving problems, Commander. And Enigma is the most difficult problem in the world.
No, Enigma isn't difficult, it's impossible. The Americans, the Russians, the French, the Germans, everyone thinks Enigma is unbreakable.
Good. Let me try, and we'll know for sure, won't we?
The Imitation Game was inspired by the much more real historical biography, Alan Turing, The Enigma, by historian Andrew Hodges, who's also a mathematician and gay rights activist. He joins us from London. Andrew, welcome.
Hi, John. Thank you.
So Turing is such a fascinating character. So much of what we think of as an intelligent computer and the nature of machine consciousness comes from his original ideas. How do those ideas grow out of his work during the war effort?
Well, even before the war, you see, he had this fundamental theory of what computing was all about. And in the course of that, he discovered this idea that was just his idea of the universal Turing machine, which now people would see as the basic idea of the digital computer. But what the war did, if you're asking about that, was to turn that theory into something much more like practice. Now, you couldn't build anything like a universal machine, a computer, during the war. That wasn't done. The various machines they had for code-breaking were special machines. But it did bring Turing into direct contact, hands-on contact, with the technology, the cutting-edge technology of the period. And he saw in 1944-45 that that could be used to implement the computer. He also, through the war, had a very good knowledge of the scale of problems like guessing and judging, which people might have thought of as being human things to do. He saw as things which you could mechanize. But behind that is always, in Turing's thought, the basic interest in what the mind does. That's what had started him going on the problem of logic in the 30s. And that's what he described his computer plan as in 1945. He called it quite cheekily, really, building a brain.
Now, were these original theories that predate the war, were they what got him onto the... And he was at Bletchley Park, right? He was part of that team, right? The Enigma
right,
team?
It's a very interesting connection between the pre-war work and how he got into the code-breaking work. He took the initiative. But he saw the coming of Nazi Germany very early, and he built a machine out of binary multipliers in the physics workshop at Princeton with a physicist friend of his. And he brought that back to England in the summer of 1938. And it's clear that he had formed the opinion that war was coming and that he would like to be in on the crypto level, which in those days there was no textbook of or anything like that. He just sensed that this was the important thing for him to do. And so it was a seamless transition. Mm. He moved into that government department, which later became known as Bletchley Park when it moved there for the wartime period. And he was introduced to what they did in that summer of 1938. He then started full-time when the war between Britain and Germany began in September 1939.
Parallel to all this that was going on, did he have internally this sense of duality about hardware and software that we take for granted today in the way that we look at computers? Did he understand that there was a software dimension of his personality and a hardware dimension of his biological brain?
Absolutely. That goes right to the heart of what he was like. Very unusual for someone who would have been called a pure mathematician in the 1930s. That completely overlooks that he had this real yearning for doing things in a practical way, something which really would embody an abstract idea, which is exactly what the computer does. So as I've explained, he built this actual machine, and that was a very unusual sort of thing to do. That's not what mathematicians do really. I mean, that's a weird thing. He did some other practical things like that as well. And that was what set him up exactly to be the kind of person who could take the logic of the Enigma and see a way through it by this following this idea of the consistencies and contradictions between the letters in the plain text and ciphertext, and turn that into design for a working machine. And those things just came together extremely quickly.
In his sexual identity and conflicts within himself that were so much a feature of his later life and tragic end, did he view his sexual orientation as a software problem, as a hardware problem, as a hardware problem he wanted to solve, as just something he had to live with? What did he psychologically? How did he deal with that?
There's a whole developing story. It's not a single story there. I mean, it's a developing life and developing society in which he lived. And so before the war, I think he was in a protected environment, being in the King's College, Cambridge environment. It's the environment of the John Maynard Keynes, Bloomsbury Group, literary people, that very tolerant area. And then after the war, he moved out of that and actually became much more confident as a modern-minded gay man after the Second World War, much more exploratory and interested positively in it.
Why do you think he killed himself?
Well, I think there was more of an internal conflict before the war, and certainly, like any young gay man of that period, be very worried about what to do in society. How could you live? I mean, it was a very, very difficult thing. And then after the war, especially towards the end of his life, he became much more conscious of the developing situation of gay men. In fact, he'd continued to do work for what had become GCHQ, the British code-breaking establishment, after 1948, but that was stopped in 1952, and indeed in political military practice, gay men have been excluded from such work. So he was not welcome anymore, and of course he was a person with enormous secrets in his head. He held all the Second World War material from top to bottom, really, and extra things as well. But he was in a very, very isolated position.
Andrew Hodges, mathematician, gay rights activist, historian, author of Alan Turing, The Enigma, the biography that inspired the major motion picture, The Imitation Game. Andrew, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving, with brain games to calculate baseline scores and build a personalized brain training program. Performance can be compared to global averages. Learn more at Lumosity.com.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.